Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The Game, Nick Braden, D-Maze Marquise with you here on this Thursday edition of the show. Good to have you in for the next 4 hours. Locked and loaded today. So much to get to. Literally every single segment could be epic. That's the kind of Thursday we have in plan for you.
I think it should be guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
I mean, I think every segment of the show history, yes, historically,
exactly,
has been epic.
So real quick, Preds tonight. I know you've got some Smashville Live stories. But I'll be damned if I didn't feel old last night. NBA on one TV, college hoops on the second TV.
Oh, no.
Jerry Stackhouse snaps a 20-game losing streak for Vanderbilt, wins his debut. Opponent irrelevant, Southeast Missouri State. But I'm like, wait a minute. I remember like when I was 12 years old watching Jerry Stackhouse play for Dean Smith, and now he's coaching, and he's coaching Scottie Pippen's kid. I'm like, where did my childhood go? Life is over.
Up in smoke like the rest of ours?
Jeez.
It's going away slowly.
It was just like one of those moments where like wow, I'm getting old. Scottie Pippen's kid is playing college basketball.
Derek's going on a college visit, and he's about to be an empty nester.
Yeah, so time does go by. Time is not on our side. No, it's not.
Seems like yesterday you were just in the Liberty Bowl.
Seems like yesterday when all my pain is gone away. Is that how the song goes?
I think so.
Something like that, yeah.
Yes.
The pain caused by the floor of the Liberty Bowl because it was a cement.
Let's not go back there.
No, we will not.
First started my freshman year at the Liberty Bowl playing Louisville. It was horrible. It was raining, sloppy. I mean, I thought bowl games. When you think of bowl games as a freshman,
glamorous.
You think you're going somewhere sunny. You know, you're getting this huge swag bag, even though they ain't called a swag bag then.
And you end up in Shreveport.
But you get this huge swag bag, and everything is fine and dandy. We end up, you know, in Memphis, which, I mean, you know, I hadn't been, you know, being from Detroit, I had never been to Memphis. So it was cool.
Did you guys go to Graceland? Do you guys a tour or anything?
We did a tour of all of the historic places in Memphis, which, I mean, Memphis is one of the most historic cities around. But then game time came, and it was 30 degrees and raining. And as a freshman, I'm just standing out there. Didn't play much with my Newman gloves on.
I remember the Newmans.
Yes.
Do you guys know those garages?
My low-cut Reeboks.
Nice. You know those garages, like in the 80s, that had that really thin piece of carpet on it?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You know, like it's cement. I don't think I ever had a garage with carpet on it, but I feel like in the 80s, that was like a thing. I don't know. Maybe somebody can correct me.
No, it was.
So I feel like that's what the floor of the Liberty Bowl probably felt like as a football player getting tackled. Am I wrong about that?
So you're saying the turf wasn't good for humans to fall on?
It was grass at the Liberty Bowl.
It was grass at the time?
Yeah, it was grass at the Liberty Bowl, but it was just horrible grass.
Yeah.
Well, that's bad.
Horrible, and we lost.
Well, that's not good.
Sorry to bring you back to your childhood.
Yeah, I mean, hey, sometimes you got to do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the crazy part about it is that I end up playing my first NFL game. In Memphis.
Cool. You're like, cool.
Fantasy team name next year? The Memphis Masons.
So,
last night.
So, I have a buddy of mine who, we talk about time going by so fast, right? Like, there's a phrase with parents that is, oh, they grow up so fast, right? And my buddy always looks at people that say that, and he says, Actually, no, that's not true. They all grow up at the exact same rate. Mm-hmm. Every single day is the exact same amount of time. Do you have a problem with somebody like being like, not like an editor, but just somebody who's like, no, hang on. Actually, that's not true. They don't grow up fast. They grow up exactly the same pace as you and I did. Everybody's kids, like my daughter's 18. It took her 18 years to grow up the exact same amount of time as everybody else.
She didn't get to 18 quicker than anyone.
She didn't get there faster than anybody else. So I kind of think it's snarky and hilarious, but I can see how people might take that as it's just a phrase, dude. Leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
Just settle down. Chill out. So, I love it. I think it's hilarious.
Smashville Live last night. Any good stories?
Yeah, I mean, a couple. I mean, Mike Fisher is a fascinating individual.
Did he bring the missus?
No, of course not.
Okay.
No, that would not. As famous and as popular and as amazing as Mike Fisher is, Carrie would, like, the whole place would be swamped if Carrie showed up. So, no, he did not. First of all, he told me, and this was not on the show, actually, yesterday was the first time he had skated since he retired. So he got a little game going out there in Franklin where he lives or whatever with a couple of the old guys. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to be sore tomorrow because it's the first time I've skated in a year and a half. And, you know, being out of the game, I think he talked a lot about leadership. I asked him about what it takes to be a great leader. And he was big on communication, talking about Peter LaViolette and how good Peter LaViolette is at communicating. And that's what makes him, you know, the push and pull. I thought this was interesting, too. And I think it's just a good lesson because Mike is a very wise sort of sage guy. Just that he never really cared about a coach's abilities on an X's and O's standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
He cared about, you know, do you have my best interest in heart? And if you've got my best interest at heart, then I'm going to take your best interest at heart. And then we're all going to run through a wall together. And, you know, I think that's lost in a lot of businesses where you need great leaders for a business to run smoothly and be productive and to really go after the thing that you're after, whatever it is, the Stanley Cup or, you know, whatever. And I think he just is he's just got such an interesting way of speaking about these things. And so if you have a chance to go back and listen to it, I recommend it. He talked a lot about, you know, Roman Yossi and the way he talks. You don't have to speak a lot to be a great leader. Just a very interesting conversation around leadership. And I think it applies to every office in America that if you have your employees' best interest at heart, and they know that, and you're all pulling in the same direction, you're going to accomplish far more than if you're trying to, you know, battle with people. And I know that sounds like common sense,
mm-hmm.
but I think I found it to be a very important lesson listening to him. Also, he doesn't remember the plane flight at all coming back from Anaheim in Game 5.
Really?
Doesn't remember it at all because, you know, obviously he was pretty beaten up at that point going to the Cup. That they go out to Anaheim, they have to get a win to keep this. It's 2-2. They go out to Anaheim in Game 5, Game 6, and he doesn't remember flying out there or flying. But I go, do you remember the flight? Like, do you remember what it was like? He goes, I have no clue. I don't remember any of it, and it's because he was concussed. He was concussed, and he was very open about how, you know, his brain was mush at that time. And didn't have any recollection of even flying out to Anaheim.
Not to make it too dark on a, you know, 6:07 here on a Thursday, but he didn't start alluding to, like, CTE or anything like that,
no,
did he?
No. Just, but, like, I mean, it's sort of implied at this point. When you can't remember a chunk of time because you were concussed,
mm-hmm.
like, that's, I don't know what else, I'm sorry, science, I don't need it, I don't need you at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't remember.
Yeah, hello, it's obvious.
Like,
my brain hit my skull.
And that wasn't the point. The point wasn't to get into CTE or whatever, but I found it interesting to hear an athlete talk openly about the impacts of a concussion and what it's done to him even today, 2 years, 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
He has no clue. He has no recollection of the flight out to Anaheim and the flight back and the experience. And it's
brutal.
It's just sort of it's not dark. It's just sort of scary a little bit. And that these guys are going out there and laying it on the line. Like, Derek, you know, you talk about, hey, you want to run a play for Bama right now? And you're like, oh, I got a headache. You know, like that's a real thing. Like, mm-hmm. athletes experience that in a really, really tangible way, obviously.
Predators and the Avalanche tonight, a Central Division showdown in Colorado. The puck will drop at 8:00, pregame at 7:00. Here on 102.5 The Game, the Preds sitting on 20 points, Colorado with 18. The Blues keep rolling, and obviously this is a big-time matchup. Colorado continues to ascend each year in the postseason. And remember back when we started, you know, our preview of the season back in late September, early October, All the experts believe Colorado is the team in the Central this year.
Yeah, this is a – listen, it's just one of 82. We got a ton of games. But this does feel like one you circle and you just go, all right, let's learn some stuff here, right? Let's find out, because we've seen these teams in the playoffs. We've seen Colorado's growth over the last two or three seasons. We know how well this Nashville team is playing, especially in offense and ideally on the power play, so that you get Dan Lambert's face tattooed on your butt cheek.
Give it all to me, baby. Give me it all.
Derek's shaking his head over there.
I'm just like,
I'm going to send you guys selfies once I get it.
You don't want his whole body printed on your face.
Depends on where you put it at. I'm good on the selfie.
Yeah, what about a full-length Dan Lambert?
On your torso.
Down your ribcage, just exactly. A man standing with a clipboard.
Hey, boys, you want to see my lamb stamp?
Wow. You've been working on that. Hang on, you've been working on that.
Yeah, the lamb stamp.
He's been working on that one.
Yeah, dude.
I like that, dude. That's really good.
But I digress.
No, listen, great game tonight.
Yeah.
You circle it. You find out how you guys stack up against each other. And it's just the beginning of a five or six game, maybe a playoff series stretch of games against each other that may decide the division championship. We know this is going to be a 0.234 points at the end of the year. We know it's going to be close. So let's learn some stuff about both these teams tonight.
Loaded show today. D-Mace dissection of the All-22 will come up very early this morning. We will do that at 6:30. We've got coffee with the coach, Kevin McCarthy of the Predators. At 7:30, we're going to get a Chiefs perspective on Sunday, get the latest on Patrick Mahomes, find out what his deal is as they take on the Titans. So we'll have a writer from The Athletic who covers the Chiefs. Hal Gill's going to stop by. Joe Rex wrote. So we are absolutely packed on today's show. Morning Drive live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. We'll come back. I saw this yesterday on Twitter. A lot of snobbery in the world of hockey looking down on Predators Stars Winter Classic. A lot of hockey elitists north of the border and in the Northeast. Teams from the original six, thumbing their nose at all of us. Got to rip them when we come back. Stay there. It is 6:15 Morning Drive here on a Thursday edition. D-Mace dissection coming up at the bottom of the hour. 85 will go all in on the All-22. Is this Carrie?
You know it.
Yeah, it is. Dude, so featuring Ludacris, by the way.
He did talk a little bit. I did ask a little bit about Carrie.
Well, you have to.
I know you got to rip some Canadian, which
we will.
Which technically is Mike Fisher, although he's now naturalized. He's now a United States citizen. So he just, you know, kicked Canada to the curb, I guess. He met Carrie. Obviously, everybody knows how they met, which is like sort of a meet and there's a meet and greet in the backstage of one of her concerts, and one of her friends introduced them, and it was sort of like they hit it off from there. He did tell me a story. I tried to get Mike Fisher to hook up Chase McCabe with Taylor Swift. Like, we tried, and Fish was like, yeah, we know, Taylor, we can hook you up. And Constable comes over to the TV, or comes over to the set and puts on the headset, and he's like, really? can you get me hooked up with T-Swizzle? And I asked, I said, Mike, can you give Constable some advice on how to talk to a celebrity? Because it worked for you. You talked to Carrie Underwood into having your children.
Yeah, but the difference is Mike Fisher looks like this.
And happened to be a famous athlete.
And Chase looks like this.
Don't make it about looks, man. Don't make it about looks.
Not all about looks sometimes.
I'm not going to rip Chase. I'm just saying Chase is not sexy.
Man, y'all damn lying. It is all about looks, man. Why y'all lying? Damn it. Why y'all lying?
I was trying to help the boy out.
No,
it is about looks, man. Until
you make a certain amount of money.
You make a whole bunch of money, or you get to know the person. But when you see someone,
of course it's about looks.
You say, "Oh, they're beautiful, or they're handsome," or you see someone and say, "Damn, he looks like the bottom of my boot," or "Damn, she looks like she should stay in the dark."
I'm
not gonna sit here. Goodness gracious, man! No, stop.
Look at Derek. Tony.
We're not walking around with pillows, okay?
Welcome to the show, Derek.
Goodness, man!
He's alive,
man. I despise that, man.
He's getting an adrenaline.
Gosh, man!
I'm pretty sure Tony Snell gets more girls than me. And if you ever seen what Tony Snell looks like, and he's not the best looking.
When Mike Fisher walked up to Carrie Underwood
with his long locks,
she said, "He's a handsome guy."
Of course.
And had he been, you know, had he looked like the bottom of her boot, she'd have been like, I gotta get to know you more.
Are you saying
I gotta talk to you some more? Let's just keep talking, you know. But because he's a handsome guy,
very attractive,
that kind of opened it up. It's like, okay, then she started talking. It's like, ah, this guy's interesting.
So
you
are,
know?
Are you suggesting that Chase McCabe looks like the bottom of Carrie Underwood's boot?
I'm not saying Chase looks like the bottom of her. Maybe the shoestrings. No.
Oh, man.
No, Chase. No, I'm just kidding with him. No, Chase is a handsome guy, man. But Chase probably does
That's
get
your
weird.
Opinion.
He probably does get weird around.
No, see, here's the thing.
Certain girls, so you know, and he had messed it up for himself.
Of course, I asked Mike. I said, "Come on, how do you make it? Like, how do you make the conversation normal when you're introduced to Carrie freaking Underwood? Like, how do you what is that like?" And he goes,
"How do you put on your pants?"
Right, like, and that's his answer. It's like, "Hey, we're all just people. Like, just talk to us. Like, I'm a person. She's just a person. We just started talking. Like, just having a normal conversation. Like everybody else. We have problems, and you know, they're raising their two small children right now. And he put this on Instagram. Like, she's doing a show like three or four nights a week, like breastfeeding, you know, working out 90 minutes a day. Like like Carrie Underwood's routine is pretty grueling. It's pretty insane what she does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't listen to her music. My wife loves her music, but and she's got an unbelievable voice. But just the amount of time and effort she puts into a 8-month-old child and one of the most famous music careers on the planet, all while being a I have a lot of respect for what they do, and sort of Mike's able now to be around with the kids a lot. So, but I thought it was funny. He's like, yeah, you just got to talk to her like she's normal. He tried to set up one of his really famous hockey. He didn't tell me the name, but he tried to set up one of his really famous hockey buddies with Taylor Swift. And this guy could like talk. He's like me, just could talk to a brick wall and have a great time. And
at least you acknowledge
and,
it.
And me and the brick wall go way back. We have lots of really fun conversations. It never talks back to me. It's great. And he said this dude talks more than anybody's ever met in his life, and he met Taylor Swift, and he turned into just a ball of goo and could not say a word to this person. And he's like, dude, you blew it, man. Like, how did you had a chance.
See, people like
you
that, I think you have to – you can't talk to them in this big setting.
Right.
It has to be, if you're going to meet them, it has
intimate,
to be more of an intimate setting. Yeah. So then now you could just talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he looks at Chase, he goes, I go, it's all about confidence, right? And he goes, yeah, it's all about just confidence. And he looks at Chase, and I go, so does this guy have confidence or not? And Mike looks up at Chase and he goes,
No.
Oh, yeah, he's got it. Oh, yeah, he's got it.
Oh, Chase has
confidence.
Chase has confidence. That's one thing he does have.
Yeah, after a couple of cocktails, sure.
He might have too much confidence based on you telling him he looks like shoestrings.
I was just playing. Chase, no, he doesn't.
I also got like more like a worn-out insole.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but you weren't generous. You weren't shoestring.
That's even also almost worse than the bottom of the boot.
Exactly.
It might be worse. It's all sweaty and smelly.
Yeah. It's got those little dots on it. Like
exactly.
A little
soft and gooey.
Oh, man. So, you're wrong for that one.
Yeah, I know. I'm not right. I saw yesterday our buddy The Ultimate Predator got into like a big Twitter beef with a lot of people on social media, and he tweeted this out. I thought this was interesting. He said the Stars, they went the same route as the Preds, honoring historical Dallas's hockey for repping the city with the Winter Classic jerseys. And he says, it's amazing to me the number of people dumping on both Nashville and Dallas about the jerseys, the game, the location, the whole thing with the Winter Classic. And it got me thinking about people in the Northeast, you know, Flyer fans or Ranger fans or Bruin fans, the Canadian teams. You know, if the Winter Classic this year was the Bruins and the Leafs.
Which is like what it is almost every other
right,
year.
Right. And like if they were playing it at Fenway Park, all the hockey elitists and the traditionalists would say how great of an idea this is. Yet it's right. The Predators and the Stars. It's at the Cotton Bowl, iconic venue. And some people that aren't included in this want to kind of tear it down.
Number one, you know what I'm about to say. To Ultimate Predator, who I know.
DTB?
DTB, baby. No, it's not down to whatever B stands for. No, it is, don't take the bait. So, number one, don't take the bait here. Don't let it bother you. What is College Game Day? What's one of the major thesis philosophies of College Game Day?
Good stories.
We want to showcase all the different parts of the game.
Yep.
We want to show you Kalamazoo, Michigan, and Fargo, North Dakota. Is it South Dakota? North Dakota. We went to Beale Street last week, which is why I think they should be in Minnesota this week instead of LSU-Bama. I know why you're at LSU-Bama. That is part of the fabric of what game day is all about. And if you want to go for 1 year, you want to go to one of the oldest football stadiums in the country and sort of pay tribute to the history of hockey in two sort of non-traditional markets, and look at the history of Dallas and the history of Nashville, that's a great thing. There's nothing it's an amazing, awesome, great thing for them to be doing. I think they did a great job with both logos. I think the Stars logo is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think the uniforms both look great, and they pay sort of homage to the past, which is a cool thing to do. I don't know why it has to be anything more than that. Why does it have to be anything more than that? Just acknowledge that it's a cool historical thing and then experience it and then move on. And I would say to guys like Ultimate, don't take the bait. Who cares what some person, some hockey guy in Boston thinks about your team? Who cares?
Yeah, apparently some of the guys on TSN were ripping on the logos. And if you think about it, it's a division rival. They had a playoff series last year, so it's kind of a rematch in that sense.
Good teams.
And as much as I love college football, New Year's Day college football doesn't have the same feel it used to have when you take the playoff and you have it on the 28th or whatever the date might be. Like, the Rose Bowl to me will always be the Rose Bowl, but the Rose Bowl's at dinner time. So when you have a hockey game 5 hours earlier, I don't even think it really curtails your college football experience.
And is that even their argument?
Some people were saying, well, New Year's Day is all about college football. And I'm like, I love college football as much as anybody, but a hockey game bright and early when you're hungover New Year's Day morning? You can do a lot worse than that.
Pop some champagne.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I just hate traditionalists. I hate people that don't like change.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Some things, you don't like it, but I think everybody is sort of that way with certain things. I think we all are, you know, creatures of habit. And, you know, if something changes on us, we don't agree with it right away. But then, you know, the more you see it or the more you're in it, it's like, okay, I'm cool with it.
Give us the Beano Cook story. You mentioned change. Yeah.
I was watching, you know, because it's the 150 year of college football, and then it's the 100th year of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So they both, you know, and they both kind of, you know, orchestrated this perfectly right at the same time.
It's amazing how that worked out.
Absolutely. So they do all of these really unique stories and fun stories. So this had to be early 80s, might have been mid 80s, somewhere around there. And this is when teams started to slowly but surely started to change their uniforms just a little bit. Not a lot of major change, just subtle little bitty changes. And they were talking about the best uniforms in college football. And everyone knows, I mean, the iconic uniforms. It's Penn State. Penn State is really the iconic uniform. Like, you see a Penn State uniform, you know it from miles away.
It's one of my favorites.
Exactly. So, because it's simple, classic, elegant. You don't have to really do anything. So, I guess they had that contract with Nike. They finally got their contract with Nike. And they didn't do much change. They just put a swoosh on the, like, sort of like the lapel area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They just put a little swoosh. Man, Beano Cook went off. Yeah, how are you going to desecrate an iconic uniform like that, putting a swoosh on it?
I hate to see what he thinks of Oregon.
Corporate logo.
Beano, it's only a swoosh.
Yeah.
It's about, what, an inch long?
And they paid about $50 million for
that. Exactly. It's just a swoosh. Yeah. But that's when you talk.
Well, how dare Penn State go from Russell Athletic to Nike?
Absolutely. That's what you, when you talk about traditionalists, anything that changes, if you just put a dot on a uniform, it's like,
Nike,
what are you doing?
And Nike in the 80s was not Nike that it is today.
No, it's
like,
not.
Nike was like the third, before they signed Jordan, they were the third brand. Like, Adidas and Fila, right, were like big before.
It might have been. And I know Reebok was big, too, in college football.
So they brought in Jordan. I mean, the story about Jordan and how he signs with Nike is fascinating, that they bring him in and they pitch him on signing with Nike in this tiny little shop in Oregon, mm-hmm. right? And, like, we're a nobody apparel company that's just getting off the ground because we've got such a running history, a track history in the state of Oregon, and that's how it gets started. I guess this guy had designed shoes or whatever, and so they pitch him on it, and he's like, he eventually signs with Nike, and it changes Nike forever. Like, the
voila,
one guy's decision. But you're right, the uniforms is the one that people are so extraordinarily sensitive mm-hmm. about. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I always think about the Denver Broncos mm-hmm. in the mid-90s as sort of like the definitive change when we went from like classic and traditional old school colors to all this piping and like
when
shoulder
Denver
stripes.
Changed, people
and
were going crazy.
Like, they had the blue down the chest, down the rib cage, and then
were
the Miami Hurricanes followed
suit.
Were they
one of the first NFL teams to change sort of like their,
when they added all the
their
weird
apparel and stuff, how they, like the colors and all that other stuff?
It was the end of the Elway era.
Because they won a Super Bowl with their new uniform.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And they just didn't look like
The Denver Broncos.
It was just such a weird
look. The orange crush look was gone.
And I, again, I'm not saying Tampa Bay should have always looked like creamsicles, but I, you know, their pewter stuff looked pretty cheesy for a long time. It still kind of does. That to me, I always look at the Denver Broncos and say that, and then the Miami Hurricanes had the greatest football team ever assembled in college football history, probably 2000, 2001, 2002, and they had just made their big switch also from the orange traditional Miami uniform to like the green with like the piping and the shoulder plates and the rib cage, and like it all changed everything, and people lose their minds over uniform changes these days.
No, it's you're right. I mean, I lost my mind a little bit when they changed the Titans uniforms. I just didn't want them to change.
You mean the new ones?
Yeah, I just didn't want to. I didn't want them to change the helmet, the logo, because I mean, as much as people call it a thumbtack, I mean, some things I think you gotta just keep change the jersey. Okay, well, fine, but keep the thumbtack. I like it.
All right. Flaming thumbtack.
Coming up next, an early installment of a D-Mace dissection here on a Thursday. Derek Mason will go behind the all 22 of your Tennessee Titans. He's got a few plays highlighted as the Titans get ready for the Chiefs. We'll get to the tape when we come back here on Morning Drive. The following is a presentation of ESPN 102.5, The Game, in collaboration with Morning Drive, and cannot be replicated, duplicated, or reproduced without the express written consent of Derek Mason.
Who, by the way, is a modern American hero. Just want to throw that out there.
Yes.
Derek Mason, my hero.
Yes.
Let's get to the tape.
Man, I mean, that's why I'm going to live till I'm 108. Because you know they said that's good for you.
Yeah.
Your immune system is going to be in fantastic shape.
Yeah, that's they say it's good for you.
I know.
Seriously.
Living to 108?
Yes. No, yeah. But the things that people do. Well, I mean, it's a grown folks station. no, but they said, you know, if you have your wife and you and your wife have fun a lot, then that's better for your health. Seriously.
Like going to dinner?
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff. Okay. Dinner, you know.
The things that follow?
Yeah,
dinner?
Have a little cocktail and then whatever follows. There you know, y'all play a little chess.
Reduces stress.
Yeah, reduces
enhances
stress.
Enhances immune function. Yeah.
You can use that, Nick.
So, yeah. There's a lot of things I could use.
I could use a better immune function myself.
So let's make sure we're breaking down the right type of tape here. We're going to go behind the scenes here, all 22 of this was last week's game.
This was last week's game. Versus the North Carolina Panthers. Carolina Panthers.
I was going to say, isn't there only two teams in the league that don't have a state? That they are a region? It's the New England Patriots, which is not a state.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the Carolina Panthers, which is not a state.
That's correct.
There's a north and a south. Maybe we don't need a north and a south Carolina.
Yeah, you're right. We don't.
We definitely don't need a north and a south Dakota. Why are there two Dakotas?
Just merge them together.
Dakota. Dakota.
Exactly. Let's add D.C. or Puerto Rico and then make the Dakotas just a Dakota. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
We can put a border around Colorado. we can put a wall around Colorado, too. But why you at it?
Don't know why.
Yeah, don't know why. But here we go.
Yes.
All right, dissect something.
All right, people. My computer has been on the fritz, and I had to do some things. I had to take it to the lab yesterday, and I jotted down some plays, three plays, and then I had to, you know, write my little, what do they call it, synopsis. So,
I think this is your scouting report, right?
Yeah, my
scouting report. Now, what player are we putting under the microscope here?
We are putting the first play. It's ironically, it's the first play of the game.
The first play, first play.
Yeah, first play like for that. The Tennessee Titans. They are starting at, it's first and 10 at their own 24. 12 minutes and 2 seconds remaining in the first quarter. So this is when they first get the football. We're going to call this I left close zip, Z over X go. This is, you know what, when we talk about Arthur Smith not being aggressive enough, this was a outright aggressive play call against a team that's really good against the pass. Last week they played a team that was really good against the run, and they tried to run the ball. Well, they're playing against a team that's really good in the pass, and they're trying to throw the football. Corey Davis comes in motion. He play action pass to Derrick Henry. Linebacker suck up. Not Ryan suck up.
No, he messed him up.
Yes.
He sucks in his own right.
Exactly. But they bite on the play action pass. He has Corey Davis running an over route. The safety does exactly what he wants him to do. and he runs and attacks Corey Davis. That leaves one-on-one with Tajae Sharpe in the corner. He throws a excellent pass, and it's a pass interference. You're talking a 40-something yard gain on a first play. I like this play is because, one, the play action. Everyone knows that Tennessee Titans, their tendency is to run the ball first play of the game. They chose the play action pass, which sucked those linebackers in. It gave the quarterback Tannehill a clear look at the coverage, a clear look at what was going on. He saw that the safety bit. If the safety doesn't bite, he has Corey Davis on over route for at least a 15-yard gain. He probably breaks a tackle and gets another 10 yards. He sees that the safety bites down, and he sees Sharpe running down the sideline. Throws a ball. It wasn't a perfect ball, but it was a ball that caused a pass interference in this instance because the defensive back wasn't looking back for the ball. Tajae Sharpe tried to get the ball and it ended up being a 45-yard game without a catch. But sometimes, you know, getting the pass interference is just as well. All the time, getting the pass interference is just as good as the catch, unless it would have been a clear-cut touchdown. So I like this play. I like that Arthur Smith started off aggressive. I like that Arthur Smith bucked the tendency that the Tennessee Titans have with running the football on first down, because when they did it, the linebacker sucked in. Everyone read run, and they had a guy streaking up the sideline as well as over the middle of the field. So he read that perfectly. They didn't get the pass completion, but they got something just as good. That's the pass interference.
They got the yardage.
Absolutely.
That's 42 yards, right?
Yeah. In this day and age of football where they throw a ton of flags, you know they're not going to overturn these reviewable pass interferences at any percentage that's noticeable. I think it's less than 15%. If I was an offensive coordinator in 2019, if I'm not calling 4 to 6 vertical shot plays per game, I'm not doing my job.
No, you're right.
That's just the way I view it. Like, take some shots, force these guys to throw the flag. Worst case scenario, you flip field position and it's a punt.
And even if it's a total incompletion, you're forcing a defensive coordinator to think about something.
Yeah, exactly.
If for no other reason, you're just the safeties. It's sort of like the Ryan Ellis conversation we've had this week, where like be a little dirty because you want to have people thinking about you every time you play against them. Well, you don't have to complete the pass to scare a safety into maybe a half second, because all you might need is a half second delay on a different play. Right.
Exactly.
Maybe that's where Derrick Henry gets 14 yards on an off tackle play. Right. Because he's got to think about it for that half a second.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you force the defense to play it honest when you take shots down the field. I guess a lot of it predicates on how many times you get the ball per quarter. But you should try to take at least you should call at least 2 shot plays per quarter. Now, do you get to that deep ball sometimes? No, you might not, but it's called, and the defense got to play it. The worst thing you could do for a defense is run everything short, unless your short game is just impeccable.
Like Tom Brady with the underneath
absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like Drew Brees, he loved to deliver the ball very quickly. Peyton Manning used to do it all the time and then set you up for the long pass at the end of the game, toward the end, second half of the game. So it works both ways. All right, second play we're going to call this. It's 3rd and 14 at the Carolina 38-yard line. All of these plays ironically happened early in the game. I think they had some success moving the ball early in the game with the Tennessee Titans against this really good pass defense. We're going to call this bunch right H-sit. So we got a bunch to the right side. It's 3rd and 14, so they need 14 yards. They are in scoring territory, meaning touchdown, field goal. They need, if they can't get the first down, at least they pick up a big chunk of yards to try to kick a field goal. What happens is they run basically 2 outs and a stop by Humphreys. This is a good play because they read zone. When Tannehill gets the football, he reads zone. You know they're playing zone. No fool is going to play man-to-man on 3rd and 14 because you're susceptible to give up the deep pass or you miss a tackle when a guy's streaking up the sideline. So they're trying to keep everything in front of them. Humphreys does a great job at finding a hole in the defense. These are smart players. These are smart calls, and they're smart players seeing the defense on the run. We are always taught as receivers, read on the run. Know what the defense is doing on the run. Adam Humphrey did an excellent job at getting 13 yards depth, turning around, catching the football, almost getting the first down. Ryan Tannehill takes his three-step drop. He's already in the gun. He hits that back foot, and he delivers the ball between the safety and the linebacker. This is an excellent pass because he reads it very quick. He's not trying to necessarily get the first down. What he's trying to do is put his team in a good position to kick a field goal. Now, if Humphreys catches it, break a tackle, get another 2 yards, it's a first down. But just so happened, he catches it. They corral him. He's a yard short. Sucker comes in and hopefully gets the field goal. So to me, this was a great play call by Arthur Smith, knowing that, okay, the likelihood of us converting a 3rd and 14 is very slim, but at least we can get enough yards to kick a field goal. Adam Humphreys read the defense on the run, caught it in between the two linebackers, turned up the field, got an extra yards. It still turned out to be 4th and 1, but it gives them an opportunity to kick a field goal. Tannehill reads it perfectly. Offensive line blocks well, throws in the middle field, bam, completion. Not a first down, but enough for a field goal, a makeable field goal. Let's say that,
or at least for Vrabel to go for it on 4th down, like exactly. He's like a nut job.
He can go for it on 4th down, and I think Kern. He missed it. Wide left.
I'm pretty sure Suckup missed all of them.
Yeah, he missed that wide left. Come on, Suckup.
Well, and I don't even blame Suckup for that. I think he was put out there too early. Like, I think, I don't know why you forced it. I don't know why you just didn't keep Cody Parkey had been making field goals. Not that he's like your answer at long term at the position, but like, why rush a guy who's got a weak leg back into the game? Because clearly he doesn't have a strong enough leg. Like, was it the 50-yarder that was just short? They came up just short. That's not Ryan Suckup. Ryan Suckup's better than that. So it looked like he was rushed back.
Yes, I'm getting a third play. I got it written down. Oh, here we go. Right here. I got to find it.
You want to do it right now or you want to get it on the other side?
We can do it on the other side because I'm looking for it. I got it written down, but I'm looking for it so I can go through the play.
Final play of the D-Maze dissection when we come back, and then some Titans calls on the line as well. You can jump in right now. We'll get those in the next segment. 615-737-1025. Morning Drive here on a Thursday on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. D-Mace dissection segment number 2. We'll wrap it up with the 3rd and final play.
All right.
And then we've got a Titans call to get to as well.
All right. 3rd and final play. This play is indicative of sort of how their night day went against Carolina. Started off 1st and 10. Jerry McCoy gets a penalty, so it's 1st and 5. It went from 1st and 5 to 1st and 15. You know why? Because penalty on Taylor Lewan, holding, okay? So now they're at 1st and 15, okay? And then, obviously, they go and they don't convert on that down. But the play that I want to, and they have this mislabeled for some reason. I don't know, because they have first down, then 4th down. They have it mislabeled. I don't know what's going on with the person who did the all 22. They need to correct that. So we're going to go with it's 2nd and 16 rather. We're going to go with trips left rip, and we're going to tight end in. We got they're playing zone defense because it's 1st and 15. I think it's really 3rd and 15 on this call, but they mislabeled it. It's a good play call. To me, it's a good play call because when you call plays like this, when it's 3rd and 15, you know zone, more than likely zone is going to be played. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to call plays that finds holes in the zone. Well, to me, the tight end in, finds a hole in the zone. And there's a hole there. But Ryan Tannehill sees the player, reads the defense correctly. But because he gets a push up the middle, and granted, Ben Jones wasn't playing this past game, so it was Nate Davis. Was it Douglas or Davis that was playing?
Douglas was center.
Yep. Douglas got beat off the ball right away. He didn't have a chance.
Shocking.
They shaded the guard. Well, actually, it was the guard that got beat. So it was your boy, Big Raj.
Big Raj. Oh, there you go. Big Raj.
Yeah, Big Raj.
Yeah, the captain a couple of weeks ago. Big Raj.
Big Raj gets beat. And Tannehill had no chance at throwing his ball because you got a 300-something-pound man barreling in on you. So he couldn't step into the throw. But he saw the man coming wide open, the tight end coming wide open. I think it was either – it might have been Pruitt. Coming wide open on the in route. The ball sailed high. The ball sailed high because he couldn't step into a throw, his throw. That's what we talked about a lot with Marcus when his ball sailed high. Why did his ball sail high? Well, he wasn't able to step into his throw. Sometimes it was because of the rush, but then sometimes it's because of Marcus's mechanics. He never really followed through on his passes, but Tannehill does, but he wasn't able to follow through on this when he got rushed right up the middle of the field. That's what we talk a lot about. Edge rushers. It's not necessarily about edge rushers anymore. Yeah. It's about that push up the middle. Quarterbacks are smart enough now. They tell these tackles, just push them by. I'm going to step up in the pocket and I'm going to deliver the ball. One thing they hate is that when I try to step up, I can't step up. And that causes for a lot of errant passes. And in this situation, Ryan Tannehill was not able to step into his throw because he got rushed directly up the middle. The ball sails high on him. Fourth down, Tennessee Titans punt. But they were put in that position because, one, a penalty, a holding call on Taylor Lewan, which pushed them behind the chains. And then, two, the next play, they get rushed directly up the middle. The right play is called to get a first down to the tight end. But because he was not able to step into his throw, the ball sailed high. Tennessee Titans punt the ball. People look at it and say, well, Tannehill threw the ball high. There he go again. No, but there's a lot of factors into why he threw the ball high. He couldn't, one, Taylor Lewan put him in a bad position. Two, he could not step into his throw to deliver the ball because the tight end's wide open. He's coming open on one. He's finding a space in that zone. He's finding a second hole in that zone. That's where Ryan Tannehill throws it, but he throws it high. Luckily, it wasn't intercepted because there was no one behind him. Mm-hmm. But Titans, they squander another opportunity and have to punt the football.
There's a lot to get to there. I think one of the things we probably have not asked enough is, where are you, Taylor Lewan? Where are you right now? Like, what are you doing in the locker room? What are you saying to people? You got people on other teams calling you out for being paper tough. You know what is that a thing? Paper tiger?
Yeah, paper tiger.
Paper tiger. Like, just fake tough guy, fake leader. We know his shtick off the field. Again, call it whatever you want, personality shtick, whatever. Mm-hmm. When you're winning, it's personality. When you're losing, it's shtick. I don't know. And there are major questions right now about his on and off the field performance with this team. And I don't think we've talked enough about, in general, about how much of this hangs around his neck, what's happening in this situation this year, the way it's all gone down. Like, it, from beginning to end,
it's been a disaster.
You got to lay a lot of this at Taylor Lewan's feet because, again, if you're going to be the highest paid player at your position, if you're going to have make mistakes like you just pointed out,
you're the
Derek,
highest paid player on the team beside the quarterback.
And I mean, technically, the quarterback, like, technically, he's not even going to be here next year.
Exactly.
So, you know, whatever Tannehill's making is going to be less than Taylor Lewan probably, or maybe about the same. That is a conversation there needs to be a major adjustment on the offensive line, and it can't be anymore. It's not on Keith Carter. It's not on Vrabel. It's not on Arthur Smith. It's on Taylor Lewan.
Yeah.
And it's on that offensive line to fix it themselves.
615-737-1025. Keith is checking in here on Morning Drive. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys. I hate to change the subject, but there was something that Derek was talking about, pass interference earlier.
Yep.
And I'm curious, do y'all think that the reason I've noticed there's a lot of ticky-tack pass interference calls right now? Do you think the reason why there is because now pass interference can be reviewed, so referees call the little ticky-tack, afraid that they're going to get called out on it, and I'll hang up and listen?
I don't know that that's really changed. I just feel like the referees, and I don't want to make it a referee discussion, they're just flag happy. I just feel NFL football is so choppy with the amount of penalties we see week in and week out across the league.
It could be.
Which makes me want Arthur Smith to throw it deep more because these guys are so inclined to throw the hanky.
Well, I don't think they. Here's what happens. it's almost like we're getting into the territory of what's a catch and what's not a catch. When you start implementing all these rules and we can reach, you know, you got to do this in order for it to be a catch. You got to get 2 feet down. You got to start running. You got to do a pirouette. And then you got to do the splits in order for it to be a catch. Before it wasn't like that. And it was more clear cuts. Like, okay, this is a catch. This is not.
You need to do the boot scooting boogie.
Absolutely.
And get 3 feet down.
Exactly. It's like, catch. Okay, now it's a catch. And then, you know, it made it harder for the refs to make a call on whether it's a catch or not. It's that way with pass interference now. I've always said that the NFL is reactive. They are not proactive. They react based upon what happens. And then they say, oh, we got to do something. What happened with the New Orleans Saints shouldn't have caused the whole league to just, you know, oh, we need to make a sweeping change and now we need to review pass interference. That was one call. Was it an egregious miss? Absolutely it was. But I don't think it was to the point where now you got to start, oh, we need to review pass interference and all this other stuff. I just don't know if the referees really know what pass interference is anymore. They just throw flags. It's like, I'm going to throw it. And if you challenge it, more than likely it's not going to get changed. So I'm just going to throw it and let it be what it is. The minute New Orleans started to complain about that pass interference, and it was a pass interference. They just missed it. Yeah. It was an egregious call. Terrible. They missed it. But it shouldn't have been, oh, now we need to make all these changes. No, it just shouldn't have, because it was one play.
No, the mechanism to fix what happened in New Orleans was already in place. They should have huddled up and said, oh, we missed this. That's a flag. And then dropped their hanky.
They've done it before.
And said, pass interference on the defense. Spot of the foul, first down, New Orleans. They could have fixed the mechanism was already in place to fix the problem. We didn't need to.
It was a hit to the head and everything.
We didn't need to change the rule book. I agree with you 100%. Now I will also be the wet blanket on this conversation and say I think the refs are okay. I don't think they're great. I think they're making mistakes, but I think it's a really, really impossible job. There's a million jobs I would take before I'd ever take a referee job. Don't want that job to save my life. I think it's a really tough thing to do to be a referee in football. And I think they, by and large, do a very good job of it. So I'll be the wet blanket that says I don't think there are. I need to see data on if there are more pass interference calls today than there were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. I'd need to see that data before I can say they're calling it more or less.
Let's squeeze Josh in here because he's got some thoughts on what you just mentioned, Braden. With that being Taylor Lewan, Josh, you're on Morning Drive. You go ahead.
Hey guys, thanks for taking the call. When I heard over the radio the announcement of Taylor Lewan's contract, I was so angry and afraid of what was going to happen down the road because of that contract. And I wanted to call a Saved by the Bell Zach Morris timeout and see if I could hit the rewind button for us. I just don't think that Taylor Lewan is the kind of guy who you pin that kind of money and time on and make him such a linchpin in your organization, a character or play on the field. I don't understand the value there. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it.
Oh, we're going to need to carry this over there.
Yeah, let's if we can.
Because I don't think there's a character question with Taylor Lewan.
Yeah, I think if we can, we can answer that if we have enough time on the other side. And stay on, continue to listen, because we're going to answer your question.
Yes, Taylor Lewan conversation will continue when we come back. And don't forget, be listening in the 7 o'clock hour, because ESPN 102.5 The Game is sending one lucky listener and a guest to Dallas with a Winter Classic Celebration flyaway. Be listening in the next hour for your cue to call and your chance to qualify. The winner will be announced on Friday, November the 15th at 5:30 on Jared and the GM. Hour 2 next on Morning Drive.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of Bonnie plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all Bonnie 4.5-inch vegetable and herbs are on sale through May 17th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.